The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards, in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by the 9th of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator.
And welcome to Coffee House Shops, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. And the result of the Batley and Sven by-election is in. And James, it isn't what I think had been widely tipped, which is a Tory win. Instead, Labour have managed to narrowly hold on. Tell us the details.
Yeah, so Labour have held the seat by 323 votes, despite George Galloway getting more than 8,000 votes. And I think this result wins Keir Starmer some breathing space. I think there had been an expectation in Westminster that Labour would not hold on to the seat and that that would then precipitate another crisis in Keir Starmer's leadership. Instead, because Labour have held, I think Keir Starmer has some time. I think he has a little bit more, not much, but a little bit more authority in his party. And I think some of those who've been quite kind of semi-obviously scheming against him have had their wings clipped by this. I think also on the Tory side, I think there will be disappointment. I think they expected to take the seat. I think, you know, if you look at the number of mentions of it that were shoehorned into Prime Minister's question time on Wednesday, I think that was a sign of Tory confidence. I think there is a feeling on the Tory side that combination of the news in the last week, the Matt Hancock business, and a kind of poor technical campaign in terms of getting out the vote has cost them the seat. So I think it will dent their morale, while at the same time, I think it gives Keir Starmer an opening here. I think he's going to Batley today, and I think he has a chance to say, look, you know, people in Batley rejected George Galloway. George Galloway said, you know, vote for him and get rid of Keir Starmer. You know, they didn't do that. And you know, I think he has a lot to be grateful to Kim Leadbetter, Jo Cox's sister, who I think stayed calm campaigning in the face of a huge amount of pressure in this race. But it undoubtedly does give Keir Starmer some breathing space. The question now is, what does he do with that?
Isabel, a majority of 323 isn't particularly large. In fact, it's going to be one of the smallest. But is it enough to give Labour MPs a reason for cheer and a bit of a boost? Because they've been very low in recent weeks about the state of the party.
I'm not sure whether it's a bit of a boost or whether it's just a relief. And as James said, there's a breathing space now for Keir Starmer. But I think the anxiety will now be building amongst Labour MPs after the initial relief and happiness. I think that there will be joined by Kim Leadbetter. There'll be this pressure now for Keir Starmer to do something with this breathing space, not to just sort of plod on as he's been doing up to this point. I think there's a lot of dissatisfaction. I've been chatting to a few people who are saying, well, look, you know, what do we stand for as a party? Is it that we just stand for being disappointed with the way the government is run, which is very much the sort of tenor of most of Keir Starmer's interventions? Or is there a bigger vision from the Labour Party? You've seen Keir Starmer really focusing recently, understandably, on the government hypocrisy following the Matt Hancock revelations, and again on Tory cronyism. And that was a big theme in the run-up to the 97 election, all the sort of brown envelopes, cash for questions and so on. But there was also a lot more to what Labour was offering than just look at these bad Tories, aren't they rubbish? And so that's going to be the pressure now on Keir Starmer, not just from the people who were making noises off in the past few days. We've obviously seen a bit of a smackdown from some senior Labour sources to Angela Rayner after some of her less covert canvassing techniques of her colleagues were revealed in the papers in the past few days. But also actually from frontbenchers who are very loyal, but who feel as though they're sort of holding a bit of a line at the moment and who are really waiting for there to be a chance for them to talk about what Labour stands for. Indeed, a chance for them to understand what Labour stands for under Keir Starmer, because they're not entirely sure.
James, Isabel touched on it, you touched on it. There's been an attack line for Labour in recent days involving Matt Hancock. Do you get the sense on the Tory side that they do think that
despite what the Prime Minister said about this being a Westminster bubble story, maybe the fact that the Health Secretary breaching COVID guidelines and COVID rules did have an impact.
I think it would be bizarre to think that this story didn't have an impact. Here you had the Cabinet Minister responsible for writing the rules, breaking them in the most flagrant fashion possible, when so many people have sacrificed a lot to follow the rules. And, you know, I thought Amanda Milling, the Tory party chairman, was admitting on her morning media round that it did come up on the doorsteps that it was an issue. And I think that what you saw, I think it would be very strange to think that this would not have an effect on the result. I think it also adds to the sense that, you know, again, I think that what is the Tory message? The Tory message, which was so successful in Hartlepool in the local elections, was the vaccination campaign message, which kind of gave the Tories a lot of cover for their other political messages about levelling up and the like. I think what is difficult for them is that, I don't mean there's a massive public revolt at the fact that the reopening has been pushed back by 4 weeks, but it's harder to say that the vaccination campaign is changing everything when you're having to delay the reopening. Although, obviously, the fact the UK will be able to reopen on July the 19th is because of the vaccination campaign. But that is a harder political argument to say this vaccination campaign that we have delivered is allowing the reopening when you are delaying the reopening.
Yeah, and I suppose the euphoria, if there were very low cases and you'd kept everything on schedule, is a bit different to what we're currently seeing and the message they're going to have to land there.
Yeah, and then I mean, the second thing is that, you know, at a time when the rules have been in place for so long, people are really chafing at these rules. But to then have this video of the health secretary breaking those rules is obviously going to jar with people. And I think, you know, Boris Johnson's political calculation at the time was that he wasn't going to sack Matt Hancock. He thinks that that was a price worth paying in terms of his own relations with his cabinet, in terms of not, you know, feeding the media beast. But they undoubtedly have paid a political price for that, in that you can't say, you know, yes, Boris Johnson can say, oh, the video came out on Friday and we had a new health secretary on Saturday. But I think the public know that Boris Johnson didn't sack him, and that has had a consequence.
Isabel, we've had this result, which, as we've discussed, you can't say it was a huge victory for Labour, but it is a victory. They've managed to hold on. And we've also, the most recent by-election before that was Chesham Amersham, where the Lib Dems took it. So I think if we think back to the local elections, I remember speaking to ministers saying this, I think it was the general sense in the Tory party that there was a feeling of invincibility, which always, if you look a bit further, sounds less the case. But, you know, people talking about 10 more years for Boris. Do you think that they'll feel a little bit less invincible, you know, today, given what's happened in the past few weeks? It does feel as though this ascent, which I think many were imagining for some of the reasons James outlined a few weeks ago, looks a bit more uphill.
Well, I think they're going to probably stop dining out on the Hartlepool result and probably face up to the reality, not of 10 more years, but of the next 10 months, which will be, you know, the winding down of the furlough scheme, trying to recoup some of the trillions of pounds that have been spent on pandemic support, whether that be through raids on various, you know, pension tax relief or so on, and universal credit. And then we have other legislative battles, which we've written about a lot. So the planning battles that are coming up, health reforms, lots of different things domestically that are normally an issue for governments that can really derail a government standing in the public's eyes on big issues. These are going to return to the political stage. And so we may start to see politics as usual. We may even, you know, who knows, we may even see a Labour Party that gets its act together. That's very much the thing that the Tories have been relying on at the moment, is that Labour is just quite muted, and that people are endlessly giving them credit for the vaccination programme. But don't forget that by the next election, the vaccination programme will be a distant memory in comparison to other potential mishaps or triumphs that the government could come across in the next few years. I suspect, though, that talk of an early election is probably going to quieten down a bit.
James, what could Keir Starmer do now that would scare the Tories?
I think the challenge for Keir Starmer is to find some political space. I mean, one of the things that Boris Johnson does is he kind of sprawls across the centre ground in a way that makes it very difficult for his opponents to get going. You know, you look at the fact that, you know, the government have paid the wages of 9 million private sector workers during the pandemic, that even as we're coming out of the recovery, you've got the government taking on, through the state aid proposals announced this week, new powers to help industry. So kind of where does Keir Starmer go politically, given that the Tories are in a kind of fairly classic, fairly big state place on the economy? I think that the most potent thing for Keir Starmer to go on is the politics of the backlog. In both education, health and the courts, you have these big backlogs across the piece. You know, I think which will be very difficult for the government to solve. I think Keir Starmer should start campaigning on those. You've already seen Kevin Collins resign as the education catch-up czar because the government wasn't prepared to fund the plan that he said was necessary in full. I also would give you one other thing. Tony Blair used to read local newspapers so you're going to get a sense of the issues that were bubbling up. And that was how he alighted on antisocial behaviour as a big thing that people were beginning to worry about, but that Westminster politicians didn't have any ideas about how to solve. I think the 2021 version of antisocial behaviour is online fraud. I mean, you've seen a huge rise in this because of the pandemic. And I think lots more people have been affected by it, partly because lots of people who didn't do very much shopping online or ordering stuff to their house have started to do so because of lockdown. They're often older people who are not as savvy as people of your age, Katie, or your age as well, at spotting online scams. And I think that would be quite a clever Labour issue to go on. It's a very difficult issue for government to solve, but I think it is something that worries people at the moment. It would be a good on-your-side issue for Labour. And I mean, also, for Labour to put itself on the side of being kind of tough on crime would play to the fact that Starmer is a former director of public prosecutions and would fit with the public mood.
Well, the leader's office are listening. There you go. Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.